R22 Tout le monde, antenne École du Magasin, Take You There Radio.
This is a sound bowing session. Vogue or voguing is a highly stylized modern house dance that evolved out of the Harlem gay, black, Latino, and transsexual ballroom scene in the 80s. It gained mainstream exposure when it was featured in Madonna's song and video Vogue, and when showcased in the 1990 documentary Paris is Burning, which went on to win the Grand Jury Prize at the 1991 Sundance Film Festival. The main characters of the film died of AIDS-related complications along the 90s. Then, voguing is about posing, and to strike a pose is to pose a threat. A sound voguing is a call to curatorial action, a curatorial body broadcasting discourses and text fragments of others as a contamination to be transmitted by other bodies in an in-between space that is creatorial by itself, a space to develop other discursive gestures of appropriation, traffic, robbery, or active or passive exchange. If creating is a set of gestures to make public contemporary artistic practices in their materiality, then its aim is a relationality waving from the body of the curator to the audiences to provoke new form of agencies that can constitute new kinds of citizenship. A political action to transform the world. Forms of corporeal promiscuity or social choreography that maybe were here from before, from the gates of selection and diffusion in popular culture. The MC, the DJ, the hip-hop rapper, the breakdance dancer, the 80s of voguing ballrooms and the AIDS crazes share a curatorial sensibility. Curatorial gestures began to spread then as a kind of love in the so-called lie decade. Transsexuals, drag queens, gays and sexual transgressive, Gender benders, legendary children, up and coming legendary children, mothers and fathers, elders. Surrogate families are constructed from these to replace the ones that may no longer exist as a resource, or that may be too dysfunctional to offer any sense of safety, support, or love. Houses of silk and gabardine are built, houses of dream and fantasy, houses that bear the names of the legendary founders or that bear the names of fashion designers such as Chanel or Saint Laurent, parade and pose at the balls. Houses rise and fall, legends come and go. To pose is to reach for power while simultaneously holding a real powerlessness at bay. My view differs from the one that dominates many critiques of the film and of the Harlem drug ball culture, in that I didn't see the ball as an effect of oppression, but rather as a discursive space opened up by the enunciation of the queen, a space of probable empowerment. This body, that is, the body of the queen, of the mother of the house, is not a metaphor, but a necessity. Her body is the material site of the intersection and reorganization of the various discourses of gender, race, class, and queerness, whose articulation constitutes the ball. The real threat of the drug balls and of all forms of possession trance is that, first, by discontinuous embodiments, the density and substance of appearances behind which power is wielded instantly accrues to the performers, and second, that the matters, as nodes of power, are able to pass this substance through the containing wall of the event frame and into everyday life in the houses. They are, in the restricted sense, possession mediums. I use the term social choreography to denote a tradition of thinking about the social order that derives its ideal from the aesthetic realm and seeks to instill that order directly at the level of the body. In its most explicit form, this tradition has observed the dynamic choreographic configurations produced in dance and sought to apply those forms to the broader political and social sphere. Social choreography serves as a cultural trading post where aesthetic norms, in the more limited sense, are tried out for the social formations they might produce, and at which new types of social interaction are forged into new artistic forms. We are a succession of discontinuous states. The language deceives us. So long we depend on this code, we believe to our continuity. So what kind of plasticity art and creation are proposing? It is a language beyond formalism, a plasticity where all languages can be mobilized without that none is dominant. Continuity and discontinuity, as well as attraction and aggression, are part of this art language, and that's only the exhibitions who give the chance to experiment all the spectrum of this process. Exhibition is the only valid paradigm who is able to resolve the contemporary challenge for the creation in the era of global communication. Facing the screen, my body is useless. On the contrary, the exhibition economy involved all our cognitive sense. My goal is to initiate several processes over time, processes of creation and investigation, that will lead not to a finished object, but access to situations, an exhibition. At the time of cognitive capitalism, the artist and the audience, through his way of determining the use, invent tools to counter the score of capitalism. Tools like script, scenario, noise or non-idiomatic piece, algorithm, protocol. Love is a dimension, like time and space. But love is not the answer. Post-industrial love is just another ideological device facilitating a division between public and private space, and is complicit with such a division's basis in inequality and exclusion. Art today are reinvestigating this dimension with a strong preoccupation for the patience of people. That's what I propose to share here with you. Nobody knows yet what a body is capable of. But what about love? Is it not that domestic repetition of beauty that is found in caring for and being cared for by a lover? To know that one does not write for the other, to know that these things I am going to write will never cause me to be loved by the one I love, the other, to know that writing compensates for nothing, sublimates nothing, that it is precisely there where you are not, this is the beginning of writing itself. Is this gesture not a kind of miraculous crystallization of presence? Sometimes an idea occurs to me. I catch myself carefully scrutinizing the lovely body, the body I love. To scrutinize means to search. I am searching the other's body, as if I wanted to see what was inside it, as if the mechanical cause of my desire were in the adverse body. I am like those children who take a clock apart in order to find out what time is. This operation is conducted in a cold and astonished fashion. I am calm, attentive, as if I were confronted by a strange insect, of which I am suddenly no longer afraid. Certain parts of the body are particularly appropriate to this observation. Eyelashes, nails, roots of the hair, the incomplete objects. It is obvious that I am then in the process of fetishizing a corpse, as I prove by the fact that if the body I am scrutinizing happens to emerge from its inertia, if it begins doing something, my desire changes. If, for instance, I see the other thinking, my desire ceases to be perverse. It again becomes imaginary. I return to an image, to a whole. Once again, I love. I was looking at everything in the other's face, the other's body, coldly. Lashes, toenail, thin eyebrows, thin lips, the last of the eyes, a mole, a way of holding a cigarette. I was fascinated, fascination being, after all, only the extreme of detachment, by a kind of colored, ceramized, beautified figurine in which I could read, without understanding anything about it, the cause of my desire. Black men loving black men is a call to action, an acknowledgement of responsibility. We take care of our own kind when the night grows cold and silent. These days, the night are cold-blooded and the silence echoes with complicity. Black men loving black men is a call to action, an acknowledgement of responsibility. We take care of our own kind when the night grows cold and silent. These days, the nights are cold-blooded and the silence echoes with complicity. I am oversexed, well hung, black queen, influenced by phrases like the repetition of beauty. And you want me to sing, we shall overcome? Do you, daddy, daddy, do you want me to coo for your approval? Do you want me to squeeze my lips together and suck you in? Will I be a brother then? I am oversexed, well hung, black queen, influenced by phrases like the love that dare to speak its name. And you want me to sing, we shall overcome? Do you, daddy, daddy, do you want me to coo for your approval? Do you want me to squeeze my lips together and suck you in? Will I be visible then? I am oversexed, well hung, black queen, influenced by phrases like silence equals death. Dearly beloved, I am looking at the inevitable deterioration of my flesh, as time takes what it wants of my pleasures, as I move in and out of love like an exile. Spoon-fed on hypocrisy, I throw up gasoline and rubber ballets and environmental reflex. Shackled to shimmy and sham, I jam the freeway with my vertigo and delusions. I return to the beginning, to the opening of time and wounds. I dance in the searchlight of a police cruiser. I know I don't live here anymore, but I remain in this body to witness. I have been in the bathroom, weeping as silently as I could. I don't want to alarm the other young men. It wasn't always this way. I used to grin, I used to dance. The street weren't always slick with blood, sick with drugs. I keep telling myself, pain will evaporate, but my own life appears to be one long laceration. I continue having altercations with reality. When I fuck, the salt tasted sweet. At the end of heavy breathing, for the price of the ticket we pay dearly, do we, darling? Searching for evidence of things unseen. I am looking for Giovanni's room in this bathhouse. I know he's here. I cruise a black maze, my white sail blowing full. I wind my way through corridors lined with doors closed or slightly ajar, or thrown open to darkness, seductive life, the future. Some rooms are empty, their previous occupant soon to be wiped away. Then another tenant will arrive with towels and sheets. The last corridor at the back of this cat house is lined with lockers. We rent time here so we can fuck each other. Everyone hasn't gone to the moon. Some of us are still here, breathing heavy, earthbound, creatures of desire, navigating the deadly sexual turbulence. Occasionally, I long for a dead man I never slept with. I saw you one night, in the dark room, caught in the bounce of light from the corridor. You were intent on your buggery, pushing your swollen cock into the depths of a squirming man bent over to the floor, blood rushing to both your heads. I quietly watched, stroking myself in shadow. I wanted to give you better sex, but you rejected my offer, choosing blonde, milk-toned creatures over my dusky allure. You cast my eyes aside like peasants because they like a hint of blue. I wasn't the only black man waiting you. We were all denied your touch. You granted gruffly if we came near, but you were one of us. Even in the dark, you despised in us. Occasionally, I longed to fuck a dead man I never slept with. I pump up my temperature, imagining his touch, as I stroke my wishbone, wanting him to be alive, wanting my fallen seed to produce him full-grown and breathing heavy, the moment it spills to my stomach, wanting him to be there, to be here, to be alive again. Intent upon his sweet buggery, undisturbed by the motion of time, even if my eyes do lack a trace of blue. At the end of heavy breathing, the fire quickly dismishes. Proof rise of my stomach. I open my eyes. Regret. I returned without my companion, who moments ago held my nipple, beaten between his teeth, as I thrashed out on the mercy of his hand, whimpering in tongues. At the end of heavy breathing, does it come to this? Filtering language of necessity, stripping it of honesty, burning it with fissures that have nothing to do with God, the absolute evidence of place, a common roof, discarded rubber umbrellas, the scratched disc of memory, the fatal glass slipper, the sublimations that make our erections falter. At the end of heavy breathing, who will be responsible for the destruction of human love? Who are the heartless sons of bitches sucking blood from dreams as they are born? Who will have the guts to come forward and testify? We were promised this would be an eager fantasy on the scale of Oz. Instead, we are humiliated, disenchanted, suspicious. I ask the scandal-infested leadership, what is your malfunction? Tell us how you differ from other criminals who use automatic weapons and butcher knives. They respond with hand jive, hoodoo hollering, excuses to powder the nose, or they simply disappear like large sums of money. And you want me to give you a mandatory faith, because we are both black and descendants of oppression? What will I get in return? Hush money from the recreation fund? A kilo of cocaine? A boy for my bed and a bimbo for my arm? A tax break? Or new bone west of the ghetto? You promised this would be a nigger fantasy on the scale of Oz. Instead, it's birth of a nation. And the only difference is the white men are played in blackface. At the end of heavy breathing, as the Piccanini frenzy escalates, the home crew is ailing on freak drugs and afflicted racial pride, the toll beyond counting, the shimmering carcasses all smell the same. No matter which way the wind blows, I lose a god or a friend. My sadness is too common to arouse the mercy of angels. My shame is too easy to pick up like boy Pusey from the park and go. I'm supposed to honor paranoia, automatically trust a dream, a reverend hocus-pocus handshakes. I risk becoming schizoid, shuffling between black English and assimilation. My dreamscape is littered with the shattered remains and effigies of my heroes. I journey across my field of vision, raiding the tundra of my imagination. Three African rooftops are aflame in my hand. I ride wild and naked on the back of a winged gazelle. Compelled by desperation, I plunder every bit of love in my possession. I am looking for an answer to drugs and corruption. I enter the diminishing circumstance of prayer. The murmurs of believers rise and fall, exalt from a single spotted lung. inside a homemade Baptist church perched on the edge of the Buru ghetto, the congregation sings to an out-of-tune piano, while death is rioting, splashing blood about like gasoline, offering pieces of rock for throwaway dreams. The lines of takers are long. Now is the time to be an undertaker in the ghetto, a homemade Baptist preacher. Now is not the time to be a black mother in the ghetto, the father of sons, the daughters of any of them. At the end of heavy breathing, I engage in arguments with my ancestral memory. I am not content with nationalist propaganda. I am not content loving my black life without question. The answers of negritude are not absolute. The dream of king is incomplete. I probe beneath the skin surface. I argue with my nappy hair, my thick lips so difficult to assimilate. Up and down the block we battle, cursing, kicking, screaming, threatening to kill with bare hands. The sheer velocity creates a spectacle. It reaches the shrill pitch of bloodshed like domestic violence. At the end of heavy breathing, the dream deferred is in a museum under glass and wood. It costs $5 to see it on display. We spend the day viewing artifacts, breathing heavy on the glass, to see the skeletal remains of black panthers, pictures of bushes, canisters of tears.
Puta, maricona, no estás metida, coño. No te puedo dejar un minuto, siempre estás en la esquina, puta. Mala, singa. Fucking puta esta, cojones. No la puedo dejar sola un minuto porque siempre va para la esquina. Coño. Miami time. Puta, maricona. No estás metida, coño. No te puedo dejar un minuto. Siempre estás en la esquina, puta. Puta esta, cojones. No la puedo dejar sola un minuto porque siempre va para la esquina. Puta. Puta. No te puedo dejar un minuto, siempre estás en la esquina, puta. Mala singa. te puedo dejar un minuto. Siempre estás en la esquina, puta. Mala singa.
I'd heard my calling by age 6. We had a word for boys like me, punk. Punk not because I played sex with other boys. Everybody on the block did that, punk. But because I didn't mind giving it away, punk. Other boys traded. You can have my booty if you give me yours. But I gave it up, free, punk. At age 11, we moved to Georgia. I graduated to new knowledge. Homo. Don't you know how to kiss? My new best friend asked. Homo. Shocked, I didn't know what to do with a girl when I lost at the spin in the bottle. Homo. No, I answered. I'll show you, he said, his brown eyes inviting. Homo. We practiced kissing for weeks, dry, wet, French, homo. This his older brother called us a name, homo. What's a homo? I asked. Punk, faggot, freak. I understood. We stopped kissing. Best friend became worst enemy. Motherfucking cunt. Age 12, they bust me to Hepbiza Junior High, on the outskirts of Augusta. Motherfucking cunt. A spray-painted sign greeted me on the wall. Niggas, go home. Motherfucking cunt. Rednecks hated me, because I was one of only two blacks placed in 8A, the class of Hepbiza's best and brightest. Motherfucking cunt. Nigga, go home. The blacks hated me because they assumed my class status made me a pity, assumed my silence as superiority. Uncle Tom, I was shy. Uncle Tom, motherfucking cunt. I was confused. Uncle Tom, motherfucking cunt. Nigga, go home. I was afraid and alone. Uncle Tom, motherfucking cunt. Pink, faggot, freak, nigger, go home. Cornered by identities I never wanted to claim, I ran fast, hard, deep inside myself, where it was still, silent, safe, deception. A white boy came to rescue, beckoned with grey-green eyes, a soft Tennessee drawl, seduced me out of my adolescent silence. He called me friend. I fell in love. We never touched, never kissed, but he left his imprint. What a blessing, his immaculate seduction. To feel the beat of life, to trust passion again. What a joy that it should come from a white boy with gray-green eyes. What a curse. Black performance is the resistance of the object, and the object is in that it resists, is in that it is always the practice of resistance itself. And if we understand race, class, gender, and sexuality as the materiality of social identity, as the surplus effect and cause of production, then we can also understand the ongoing, the resistive force of such materiality as it plays itself out or in the work of art. The mark of invisibility is a visible racial mark. Invisibility has visibility as its heart. To be invisible is to be seen instantly and fascinatingly, recognized as the unrecognizable, as the object, as the absence of individual self-consciousness. In between invisibility and invisibility, neglected and present, blackness is an irreducible performativity. Racism and oppression are necessary but not sufficient conditions of such advance. This is to say that if alienation and distance represent the critical possibility of freedom, they do so where the question of the human is most clearly rendered as a question of a kind of competence that is performed as an infinite set of variations of blackness. What one begins to consider as a function of the non-localizable nature of or status of discontinuity is a special universalization of discontinuity, where discontinuity could be figured as a ubiquitous minority, omnipresent queerness. We poise above teetering earth, defying limitation. Mere lines suspend us. We do not know fear. A precision for danger instructs our hand. Chaperones the passions, propelling us, partners, skin to skin, flung vast beyond gender, the sweaty grip of spirit, is all that joins us, sequined, caped, we test precarious air. Our most significant coalitions have been created in the realm of sex. What is most clear for black gay men is this. We have to do for ourselves now, and for each other now, what no one has ever done for us. We have to be there for one another, and trust less in the additions of semen and kisses to bind us. The only sure guarantee we have of survival is that which we construct from our own self-determination.
You like to vogue, and that's a fact. And let me see you do a dip without breaking your back. You like to vogue, and that's a fact. You ready, bitch? You like to vogue, and that's a fact. And let me see you do a dip without breaking your back. Vogue for me, I'm talking performance. Vogue for me, make the pussy feel warm. Vogue diggy diggy diggy, vogue diggy diggy diggy, vogue diggy diggy diggy, vogue diggy diggy diggy, back, get ready. Back, let's turn. Back, let's eat it. Back, 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 a 1001, a 1002, a 1003, and hold that pose for me. I took a walk through sleepy night to run into a city hollow. The headless horseman came out and he started, stopped it. You ready, hold that pose for me. Oh.
I assert, to begin with, that disease does not exist. It is therefore illusory to think that one can develop beliefs about it to respond to it. What does exist is not disease, but practices. This assertion does not contest the existence of viruses, antibodies, infections, or transmission routes. Least of all, does it contest the reality of illness, suffering, and death. What it does contest is the notion that there is an underlying reality of AIDS, upon which are constructed the representations, or the culture, or the politics of AIDS. If we recognize that AIDS exists only in and through these constructions, then hopefully we can also recognize the imperative to know them, analyze them, and wrest control of them. Some of the T-cells I am without are not here through my own fault. I didn't lose all of them foolishly. I didn't lose all of them erotically. Some of the missing T-cells were lost to racism, a well-known transmittable disease. Some were lost to poverty because there was no money to do something about the plumbing before the pipes burst and the room flooded. Homophobia killed quite a few, but so did my rage and my pointed furies. So did the wars at home and the wars within. So did the drugs I took to remain calm, cool, collected. Actually, there are T-cells scattered all about me, at doorways where I was denied entrance because I was a faggot or a nigger or too poor or too black. There are T-cells spilling out of my ashtrays from the cigarette I have anxiously smoked. There are T-cells all over the floors of several bathhouses, coast to coast, and halfway around the world, and in numerous parks, and in countless bars, and in places I am forgetting to make room for other memories. My T-cells are strewn about, like the leaves of a mighty tree, like the falling hair of an old man, like the stars of a collapsing universe. Brazilian anthropologist Eduardo Viveiros de Castro writes, "Non-trivial anthropological theories are versions of indigenous knowledge practices. These theories are part of a kind of strict structural continuum with the intellectual practices of the collectives that have historically been in the object position in regard to the way they are seen by the discipline. Western anthropology is a version of the forms of knowledge of its subjects. Almost as a kind of revenge, the indigenous object appropriates the anthropologist's way of thinking. As well as favoring the decolonization of thought by integrating the other, the perspectivism that Viveiros advocates also allows us to go beyond developing different points of view about each object, and instead to create a multiplicity of worlds from a single point of view. Art people loving art people is a call to action, an acknowledgement of responsibility. We take care of our own kind when the night grows cold and silent. These days the nights are cold-blooded and the silence echoes with complicity. Art people loving art people is a call to action, an acknowledgement of responsibility. We take care of our own kind when the night grows cold and silent. These days, nights are cold-blooded, and the silence echoes with complicity.
We'll be right back.
If you want to know what the undercommons want, what black people, indigenous people, queers and poor people want, what we, the weak who cohabit in the space of the undercommons want, it is this. We cannot be satisfied with the recognition and acknowledgement generated by the very system that denies that anything was ever broken and that we deserved to be broken apart. So we refuse to ask for recognition, and instead we want to take apart, dismantle, tear down all the structure that, right now, limits our ability to find each other, to see beyond it, and to access the places that we know lie outside its walls. We cannot say what new structures will replace the ones we live with yet, because once we have torn shit down, we will inevitably see more and see differently and feel a new sense of wanting and being and becoming. What we want after the break will be different from what we think we want before the break, and both are necessarily different from the desire that issues from being in the break.